Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve off-court problems. They'll talk about the latest news in college and professional basketball with coaches like Jim Boeheim, former players like Stephanie White, basketball analysts like Grant Hill, and more. Revealing insights that made them into the leaders they are today. And don't miss President Obama, sharing how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism.
We're going to work through these mailbag questions here pretty quickly, Ryan. We did have a couple super chats, and here is one. Reza with a super chat, and he has a question that's kind of related to Notre Dame. This came up when we were having the conversation about Oregon State. Reza asked, what did Oregon State do to give USC problems? Ryan, you want to take first crack at that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Reza, with how we have described USC this week in our breakdowns, USC has a lot of athletic skill. They have some athletes even on defense, but they are not a physical team at all. Even their offensive line, which is a good unit, it's not a bad unit, they win based upon angles and athleticism. They create movement with movement. And I think that what Oregon State is, and give Jonathan Smith the biggest credit for this, is that Oregon State, no matter where they have some athletic deficiencies, offensive line-wise, defensive-wise, running game-wise, they'll hit you right in the mouth, man, and they will. And they will suffocate you, and they will keep coming. That team has bought completely into what Jonathan Smith has sold to them, and they have an identity. Their identity is that they are a throwback, smash-mouth football team that is not going to back down from anyone. And I think that when you look at USC, that could be a little bit of their kryptonite. When a team is just like, I'm going to throw blow for you, and I'm not going to lose the football game, or I'm not going to – be my own worst enemy. And unfortunately for Oregon State, they were their own worst enemy in that football game, which is why they lost the game. But they still were able to keep it close because Oregon State is the antithesis of what USC is. They do not want to play tough smash-mouth football. Do they not want to match blow for blow? When a team does that, I think that they give them some issues.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We've seen over the years, Ryan, when teams are like USC, very pass heavy. This happened to Oklahoma as well. When they play teams that are physical in the secondary and the referees allow them to be physical, they have a hard time with it. And I thought they allowed Oregon State to be very physical in that game. I don't know if the officials are going to do the same thing to Notre Dame. I think that helped as well. But I think you nailed it, Ryan. USC is not a physical football team. Doesn't mean they're soft. It's just not they're the style of play on offense is just not, it's just not who they are. It's not an insult. It's just not every, it's just how they play. And Oregon State was able to really play at a high level. I also think USC didn't play well. Like, I don't think if they play a week later that USC only scores 17 points. Yeah, I think it's, I think if Oregon State on a normal game playing their game holds them to 24 to 27 on a good day, I think it was a combination of a great game plan from Oregon State, great execution of it by Oregon State, and USC had an off night. I think that's part of it too. Mm-hmm. You know, and not, it's like if Notre Dame and Stanford played again the next week, I don't think Stanford is in the game, much less wins. It's sometimes on that Saturday, Oregon State did what they did and USC had an off night.
It's also, Brian, I mean, you remember when Oregon used to struggle against Stanford, right? Like back in the early 2010s, like that was why. It was because, was Oregon a bad team? No, Oregon wasn't a bad team. They weren't an incredibly physical team though. And that's how Stanford beat them, is that they were the antithesis of them. They were a team that was going to run smash mouth, run it right at you, and they were going to play physical style on the defensive side of the ball. And that's how you stop those types of teams. It doesn't make them a bad team. It doesn't make – that's just the style that they run. Right. I would argue that LSU, not 2019 offensively, was not an incredibly physical football team. I would argue that. Does that make them not great? No, they were great. They were a great team. But it's just the style that they play.
Reza also has another super chat. He says, also, my wife scheduled dinner with friend at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Same nonsense for the Clemson game and couldn't watch live. Was at the OSU game in person. Think it's all for the best. You know, I get that, but you guys need to have a little bit of a heart-to-heart. I'm gonna say you need to have a chat with your wife and do one of two things. You need to remind her of Notre Dame's schedule, but you also need to give her – remember in high school, I don't know if they still do this, Vince, but remember when we were young, where like at your high school, like you'd go to the, like a local fast food place or the local grocery store, and they'd have like the little cards with the local football team schedule on it.
Oh, yeah.
You need to get one of those for your wife, and you need to make sure she has that in her purse or wallet or whatever she uses, so she remembers what Notre Dame's schedule is before she's scheduling dinners with friends.
I'm sure that Vince's family has this, but you have Google calendars now where you can share it one-on-one. You can see where things are blocked out.
Now, like, see, bingo. You know, not ever, especially older people. They don't always go to their phones on that, right? So, you know,
it's the only way our family operates, man.
Yeah. No, I'm going to pull up the phone and be like, you know, maybe, but I got that thing in my, that card in my wallet. So anytime you schedule something on a weekend in the fall, you make sure you check this card first before you schedule it. Plus the card can go anywhere. You can't use the excuse of, well, I didn't have my phone when we were setting this up.
Well, the problem is on the card, there's too many TBA time slots on the card. Mm-hmm. That's because those are printed preseason.
And you know, you don't make a decision until you checked with me.
That's to
find out what time kickoff.
Marriage is all about communication, people. Going to need some communication.
Also, the calendar that goes on the fridge, right? Like you can also have these out there for the older folks. Yeah,
we got that too.
Thanks, Reza. Tyler Evans with a super chat. In your opinion, what are the top three rivalries in college football? This is a good one. I mean, I think Michigan, Ohio State is probably in that conversation. The problem is a lot of the best rivalries right now are just not really in peak form. Like Auburn, Alabama, Iron Bowl's kind of been like, you know, blah the last few years. Florida State doesn't mean as much anymore because neither team's that good.
For me, the top three in no particular order: Notre Dame, USC, Ohio State, Michigan, and Oklahoma, Texas.
Okay.
Those are my
I would also go Oklahoma, Texas as one. I would go Ohio State, Michigan. That third one's tough, man. Like I want to go Notre Dame, USC as well, but there's a couple good rivalries outside there. You know which one I kind of like is Florida, Georgia. I've always enjoyed Florida, Georgia personally. I think that's a good one, but that third one's tough. That third one is really tough for me.
I think here's what makes Notre Dame unique, even not looking at it from a Notre Dame standpoint. Notre Dame's is the only rivalry like it. There's no other rivalry of teams that play out of conference that are this far apart. Like the Clemson-South Carolina rivalry, it's in-state schools. Florida-Florida State, they're in-state schools. Louisville-Kentucky, in-state schools. Or the border skirmish that is Ohio State-Michigan, but they're in the same conference. There's nothing else like Notre Dame's, and that's what makes it unique. And so I think that's something that adds to it. And then you think of just the tradition of the two teams. That's important as well. A lot of great games. You know, I think, you know, a game that I used to love to watch that's a rivalry that's gone that I miss is Texas A&M.
Oh, it was great, man.
I liked that rivalry more than Texas-Oklahoma, to be completely honest with you, until it went away. I loved that rivalry every year. I still remember watching Ricky Williams, you know, break the record against Texas A&M, you know, that the rushing record that one year. I used to think they played great games together in football.
Here, do you remember the one? It was like it was the Jaworski Lane, Mike Goodson year or whatever. Yeah. They upset Texas. It was like an early Saturday game, I think. Yeah. It was really good. It was really good.
There were so many good rivalries when we were young. I mean, the Florida State Miami rivalry when we were kids was phenomenal. You talk about the Tennessee in like when I was in high school and college, the Tennessee Florida rivalry was tremendous because they were both every year like, hey, you know what? Like this is a great game. Who the winner of this plays for the SEC title, could play for a championship. That was a great rivalry back in the day as well. But a lot of the good rivalries just either are gone, like Texas, Texas A&M, or Nebraska, Oklahoma. I used to love the Nebraska, Oklahoma game. That was I used to always love that. And then Nebraska, Colorado used to be a great rivalry back in the day when they were in the same conference, they were good. Yeah. But you know, they're all gone or they just stink. Like Texas, Oklahoma is a game I'd love to go to, but I just don't think it's a great rivalry. It just doesn't do it for me. But I'd also have a hard time kind of picking a third, to be completely honest with you, because none of the other ones are great. I think the Florida-Georgia game is pretty decent.
Yeah.
Tennessee-Alabama used to be a good one back in the day, and I'm curious if that reignites now that Tennessee is getting good. I've got a couple that I
– Navy-Army.
Yeah, Minnesota-Wisconsin is the one that I think is always underrated. That's a very underrated rivalry.
You know what I love? Well, I don't love, but it is a hostile rivalry, is BYU and Utah.
Yes.
Hate each other.
Yes.
Each other.
Yes, that's a good one. You know what, Ryan? You just nailed it. I think Army-Navy is probably going to be my third. That's going to be my good third.
That one's a great one. For different reasons, though, I think.
Yeah.
It's not a good football game necessarily. But
just the history, man.
Look, for me to say that about that rivalry when they're both running the freaking triple option says a lot about how good that rivalry is. You know, but it's the uniqueness of it, Vince, to me. It's not good.
I watch it every year. I watch it absolutely every year.
They play in a weekend where there's no other games.
Right.
It's just all the different aspects to it. That's a pretty good rivalry. But like,
I like that they got the backyard brawl back as well. West Virginia puts a pretty good one.
Yeah. That one never did it for me. I wish they would keep it. You know, like the ACC rivalries, like North Carolina, NC State, North Carolina, Duke, those don't do it for me. You know which rivalry I wish would come back permanently is Penn State-Pitt. That's a rivalry that should come back. I always liked that one. And they played a couple good games recently, if you guys remember. They had a couple really good back-to-back games back in, I think it was like 16 and 17. But all time, so I'll do it this way, Vince. I'm going to go all time. My all-time favorite rivalries, if you include the history of the rivalries for me, it's Notre Dame-USC, Michigan-Ohio State, Florida State-Miami. Those are, if you take the entirety of my life, those are the three best. Because every year, from when I was a kid, every year, Florida State Miami was two top five teams. And they were almost always really good games. And Florida State would win some, Miami would win some. Those are the three best to me of my lifetime.
Someone just asked for FCS games. So Montana, Montana State, South Dakota State, North Dakota State are also great. Loved about those games.
Yep.
Did you see College Game Day was at the Montana, Montana State game?
Who won that, Ryan? Cool.
Montana State. Montana State's really good this year. Yeah. They're really good.
So I'm saying, man, Oregon State passed for like three bills on them, dude. I mean, come on now. We have a super chat from our German friend, Michael. My tip, Notre Dame, 44 runs, 4 sacks, and 1 interception. And thank you for your super chat, Michael. Appreciate that very much.
I'll take that.
If Notre Dame runs the ball 44 times, has 4 sacks and an interception, I'd feel pretty good about the chances of winning that football
game. I would, too.
Yeah. Alan Watson with a super chat. Thank you, Alan. If we have ACC refs this week, my prediction is Southern Cal 3, the refs 10, and Notre Dame 35. Notre
Dame, hey, look, 35, 35. Somebody said something in the chat earlier when they were talking about refs. It was a couple hours ago, but like the ACC refs want Clemson's, ACC wants Clemson's resume to be stout, right? Mm-hmm. The only way to do that is to have Notre Dame win this game.
Right.
So they are ACC refs. I feel good about the fact that they're ACC refs. So.
Is it ACC refs?
It's on the road. They take ACC refs with them when they go on the
road. Do they still do that? Well, yeah, but a lot of the road games were against ACC teams.
No, but that's what they do.
Okay.
Because the away team brings the refs always. Okay. And so and their contract with Notre Dame and the ACC is that they take ACC refs with them.
God,
on the road.
They suck.
Referee, they're terrible. Been so bad.
Now,
this year,
I believe the replay really people bad. Will be Pac-12. So yeah, there's that.
Oh, good, good.
Can they're doing replays for holding calls now? What the heck? There's no flag, but we're buzzing you down to say you should have thrown one. Alan Watson with another super chat. The last two classes have been loaded. How many more in a row do we need to say we just are reloading rather than rebuilding? I think they already are, guys. I mean, isn't that the conversation we had this offseason? When everybody's talking about this is a rebuilding Notre Dame team, I don't think it's a rebuilding Notre Dame team. And it's going to be the same thing next year. They're going to lose Jarrett Patterson and Isaiah Foskey and Jason Adamiola and Michael Mayer. And I'm going to be like, they're not going to be bad in any of those positions. You know, right. They're going to have strengths at other positions, and then they're going to be still be good at those positions. Yeah. So
the ebb and flows of best position group will change year to year. But
I think that what I have seen, guys, is I think offensively and defensively, it's been inconsistent. But, you know, you had a great offensive class in 21. I mean, you had Tyler Buchner at quarterback. You had Diggs and Estime at running back. You had Lorenzo Styles, Deion Colsey at wide receiver. Jaden Thomas, excuse me, I almost forgot about him. Mitchell Evans and Kane Brong, Blake Fisher, and Joe Alt, Rocco Spindler on the offensive line. And then the next year you kind of come out where you end up missing out on guys. But the guys you got are really good. Tobias Merriweather, Eli Raritan, Holden Stache, Jadarian Price, the offensive line class was really good. And now you're bringing in what I would say, guys, if they finish the way we hope they finish, and step one was getting Kenny Minchie, check, this could be Notre Dame's best offensive class since 2008.
Oof.
And I would say this, it'll be more balanced than that 2008 class, because I think the offensive line class will be better than that one was. Now, that offensive line class had two kids I really liked. Trevor Robinson was in that class. He was really good. He was a highly ranked guy. He's not as good as Charles Jagasaw. And I really liked Lane Cleland coming out. He didn't pan out at Notre Dame, but I really liked him coming out as well, kid from Maryland. But if you look at that class, fellas, you had Dane Crist, a quarterback. He was a five-star. And, again, I'm just looking at how these kids were coming out, not what they did, because we don't know how these kids are going to do. You had Jonas Gray at running back. He was a top 100 kid. You had five-star Michael Floyd at receiver. Deion Walker was a top 100 kid. John Goodman was a really good underrated kid. You had Kyle Rudolph and Joseph Fourier. Kyle Rudolph was a five-star. Fourier was a four-star. And then offensive line, you had Trevor Robinson, Lane Cleland, Braxton Cave, who was a four-star, and then you had Mike Golick Jr. You know, like three of those four kids ended up being multi-year. Well, Golick started just the 1 year, but they all were starters on some key teams. That was a loaded offensive class, offensive class recruiting-wise. And I think this class has a chance if they can finish it off with one more guy or two more, because they're trying to get Caleb Smith and Christopher Terrick. I'm actually going to have an article coming up here in a little bit where I break down the guys that are left on the board. I talk the need, their skill, and then, of course, the latest on their recruitment. So you'll want to check that out here about an hour and a half at Irish Breakdown. I'll have that out here in a little bit as well. If they can finish with those guys, fellas, I think this could be their best offensive class. And this follows right after, you know, landing some individual talent last year, but then a great class in 2021. Offense is all of a sudden going to have a lot of talent. Now it's like, okay, can you develop and coach it up? That's going to be the question.
I feel like we don't talk enough, Brian, about the 2023 class as a whole, not even just looking at the offense, about how balanced this class is, man. Like, it is hard to poke a hole in this class. Like, there's going to be some people that are like, oh, Viper. It's like, but you also got three really good defensive ends that you can make things work, right?
And
like
Preston Zinner could play Viper if you needed him.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Kenny Minchie changed that, Ryan. Kenny Minchie removed the buts.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, there's always say, man, it's a great class, but you don't have a quarterback. Or you don't have a big-time quarterback. Man, he changed that. He changed that. Kenny Minchie completely changes the complexion of this recruit.
Because think about a couple of these positions now that we have in 2023. It's like the wide receiver class is so deep now, right? That no one ever talks about Rico Flores anymore, who's like a top 200 kid nationally. You know, like, he's a really good player. No one ever talks about Devin Houston on the defensive line, who's also a top 200 national recruits. Because, you know, just Brendan Vernon, Bubakar, and Armel Mukum, and they're all so exciting, right? But then it's just like, hey, Devin Houston's probably going to play some really good football. Yeah. We barely ever talk about Preston Zinter because he's with Jay Nosbury, and we never talk about Ben Minich because he's got a Don Schuler and Peyton Bowen in front of him. It's just like, this class is so deep.
And they still did sign, as you said, Ryan. They still have four D linemen in this class. Yes. It's not, I mean, losing Keon stunk.
Oh, no.
And if you get him, you've got arguably your greatest recruiting class since 1990. I mean, if honestly, if this class would have played out and they would have kept Keon, you're talking about your best recruiting class since 1990, in my opinion. That's how good Keon was. But it wasn't meant to be.
And if you're able to get Caleb Smith, then that is probably about as well-balanced a wide receiver hole as you've gotten in some time as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's get back up here a few more. We got Rob Osgood. I think it will be 38-21 Notre Dame. I think the Notre Dame trenches will dominate and keep USC off its game. I predict 3 INTs from USC with the pressure and Notre Dame runs for 250 yards. Then Notre Dame can tell everyone to suck it. I love the ending to that, guys. I love the ending to that. That's so great. That's so great. Jason Warnock. Yeah. Is a New Year's Six possible with a big win tomorrow? That would be motivation. Yes, absolutely. I mean, Notre 100%. Dame is still playing for its postseason life as well. I mean, not that like they're going to make the postseason. They've already qualified.
But where they're going to go is the big thing.
Yes.
There's a lot. I mean, there's one spot that Notre Dame can get in the New Year's Six the way I see it, and that's the Cotton Bowl. It's the at-large bid against the Group of Five winner, which at this point, who knows who that's going to be. But that would be the only spot that Notre Dame has the ability to get at the moment. So it's either that or a top tier ACC bowl, which could be the Gator Bowl, could be the Holiday Bowl. I mean, there's like six of them that you can choose from, but Notre Dame needs to be within 2 wins of the, there's all kinds of little things. I believe the Cheez-It Bowl has first pick. So we'll see where they end up if they don't win or if they get bumped out. A lot of things have to happen above them as well for them to get into the New Year's Six. But if they win,
about a lot, but definitely some stuff needs to happen.
Some stuff has to shake out their way. Sure. Yeah. And somebody asked if there was a chance that Notre Dame plays LSU. Not really. They would both have to lose, I think, this week. And then LSU would have to lose again for them to potentially match up in the Gator Bowl. I just don't see that.
I think there's a chance they can both play, even if LSU or Notre Dame wins out. But it would, Vince, to your point, it would require LSU to lose twice.
Right. Mm. Like, yeah, I mean, there's a chance because they would play an SEC opponent.
In one of those two, like Gator, like Cheese, like one of those, there's the Gator Bowl especially. But it would require LSU to lose twice, and I don't see that happening. I don't see LSU losing to Texas A&M. I just don't see it. I don't see it. I mean, because I think that if LSU loses in a close game to Georgia, they're in the Sugar Bowl, right? I mean, I think they'd have to get blown out to not be in the Sugar Bowl. Correct. Or do they – because they don't have to put LSU in the Sugar Bowl if they lose, right? Can't they put Tennessee or Bama? Or do they have to put them since they were in the SEC championship game?
No, it's the, whoever the number – the quote-unquote number two SEC team is, because the number one team would obviously be Georgia, and they go to the playoff, and then it would be whoever is the perceived next – SEC team, and with 3 losses, that's not going to be LSU, I wouldn't think, but we'll see.
Yeah, we have a super chat from Indy Nation. Thank you very much. If we keep Peyton Bowen, do you see him on punt returns? Good chance.
It's possible.
Here's the thing I love about it, Ryan, and we'll be quick here because we did talk about that recently. Here's the thing I love about it. Yes, maybe, but Notre Dame is adding some legitimate impact talent on special teams in this class to where it's not a because like in any other year. We're just, okay, of course it's Peyton Bowen. Or, well, of course it's Dylan Edwards. Or, well, of course it's Christian Gray. Or, well, of course it's Micah Bell. You see what I'm – or, of course it's Jaden Greathouse, right?
Yeah.
But in this class, it's like, dude, I don't know who it's necessarily going to be. But I would love the idea of getting – if Dylan Edwards is not playing anything at all on offense, then I would – want to find a way to get in the ball. But if you got Dylan Edwards in the offensive rotation, I would not be opposed to putting Peyton Bowen back there because it'd be a great way to get that kid to football.
Yeah.
Because he's dynamic.
It's going to be exciting. And it's not even just the return opportunities for kick and punt return either. It's like, I mean, if I'm Brian Mason, I'm like, wow, I can have Preston Zinter and Drake Bowen. And, you know, if they can land Brandon Hillman running down on the kickoff and kick coverage, like that's insane.
Jaden Osbury.
Yeah. Like these long, big, athletic dudes just running down on kickoff. Like, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, Peyton Bowen has a chance to be a star on special teams in every category.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Christian Gray has a chance to be a really good special teams kid. Ben Minich is going to be a special teams, like, captain stalwart before his career's over. And another one that I think is going to be a great special teams player, like, early on, is Adon Shuler.
Oh, Adon's going to
be Adon Shuler is going to be a nasty special team player. Like – and look, there's going to be a couple. Don't think that there's not going to be some things that Brian Mason's like, hey, on this punt block team, Can we get that really long, twitchy, fast kid, Braylon James, over here on kick block, please?
Or, I mean, Brian, Armel Mookum? Like,
right.
Go, sir. Go on in a straight line. Goal.
Yeah.
Boubacar Traore. Yeah.
Boubacar Traore is going to block at least two kicks during his career. And I'm talking PAT field goals. I'm talking about he's going to get those go-go gadget arms up, and he's going to do that. So, yeah. There's Brian, this team has added a lot of impact on special teams. But I think, Ryan, what I would argue is we've seen years like where they've added this kind of coverage potential. The 2018 and 19 linebacking class has added a lot of that with Maris and Bo Bauer and Ovia Gofu and guys like that, right?
Sure.
But what we haven't seen is the kind of impact returnability. Whereas you lose Brandon, I mean, you lose Brandon Joseph off your team this year, who you got as a transfer, and your next best punt return guy is Matt Salerno. No disrespect to Matt, but like in 2 years, Matt Salerno's he's not even getting practice reps returning punts because you can't take reps away from all the other dudes, you know? And again, a guy that we're not talking about who's already on the roster that we would have been talking about if not for the injury, Vince, you and I talked about that this summer. If Jadarian Price doesn't get hurt, he's back there with Chris Tyree on kick returns. Mm-hmm. There's no question. And he might be your punt returner. You know, he's that kind of dynamic kid because that's a way to get him the football if he's not getting the touches on offense. So they're going to be a whole different animal. And if the longer they can keep Brian Mason, the better.
Yes.
So that'd be huge, huge. Yeah. All right, next one, guys, and we're going to try to work through these quickly. Mitchell Connor, do you think if Notre Dame wins Saturday that there was a 12-game playoff now? Could the Irish have a legit chance at the Natty? Also thinking of how Buckner may be able to be back by bowl season. That's an interesting – I've had people bring this up to me. If there was a 12-team playoff, do you think Notre Dame could win the championship? I still say no because I just have a hard time with the quarterback position being good enough to win three games. But it would depend on who your three are. Does somebody else upset a team that you're a bad matchup against? It's a bad matchup for you, right, Vince? Like, does somebody upset Georgia? Well, so then you don't have to play Georgia.
Sure. I tell you what. Once the final standings come out, right?
Let's do it.
And we see who the top 12 are. And Sean and I, we talk about this every week in the pregame show. You know, what would a 12-team playoff look like with this CFP, you know, standings? I would be very interested to see what that would look like. The odds are that Notre Dame has to go on the road in the first round. And then if they win that game, then they're going to have to be road warriors. I mean, the bottom line, right? Because they're going to be in that bottom quarter.
A lot would have to happen for them to get up to 8.
Oh,
a lot.
Agreed.
Yeah.
If they beat USC, I see them being like 10 to 12 in that neighborhood. Yeah. And if you have to be top 11. You have to be top 11 to make it in because that 12th spot automatically goes to the group of five team. So you got to be top 11. So if they beat USC, I think that's a very real possibility. But
they jump people.
But then they're going to be playing. Yeah. They're going to be playing that 5, 6, 7 in that neighborhood. So, you know, who's that going to be? Is that an LSU? You know, is that, you know, who is that? I don't know. But that would be fun to kind of look at for sure.
Yeah. Could be Michigan.
Absolutely.
How about them apples?
No, it definitely could.
Yeah, that's fun. Let's do that show after, not next week, but the week after. I think it'd be really fun. What would Notre Dame's chances of making a run at a title?
Yeah, because what would that look
like? And would it change if Tyler Buckner returned and played to the level that we think he can? I'd say I have a hard time saying he could do that because he's been out all year and he missed that development time.
Right.
But it's in the but I also think it goes back to what you and I argued about when they made that announcement, Vince, and where you ended up turning me is. That actually might be a better chance for Notre Dame to make a run, you know, because now there's a chance that some team that you're a bad matchup for gets knocked off by somebody else before you even have to play them.
Yeah.
Right. And if Notre Dame gets a quarterback, that's a pathway for it. You know, it's a pathway for it. So Milton Fan 15, is there another historic rivalry that is nationally recognized? I have a buddy who is a huge OU fan, and this game is one of his favorites since he was young. He's too old. Well, nationally recognized, sure. I mean, I think the Ohio State Michigan game is nationally recognized, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the Iron Bowl gets a lot of national conversation, not to the degree that the Ohio State Michigan game does, you know.
Right.
Miami Florida State used to be that way. It used to, I mean, that used to be the game when they played. That's all anybody talked about was Miami Florida State. Miami Notre Dame used to be that way for a very brief time. When Miami Notre Dame played for about a 5-year stretch, everybody paid attention. About 4-year stretch. Everybody paid attention to it. But yeah, I mean, I think there's some. I think OU Texas is a nationally recognized rivalry. Yeah, I think Florida Georgia is nationally recognized. I don't think it's necessarily like, you know, to the level of Michigan Ohio State. But now is there another way of looking at it? Is there another rivalry that's like this, that where it's a national type of game? No, where it's two teams from two conferences from different part of the country. No, and that's what we were saying earlier. There's nothing like that in football. I'm very curious to see if USC can build that in the Pac-12 or in the when they go to the Big Ten, because there used to be that. There used to be some really good Big Ten Pac-10 rivalries. You know, that would like that, and we don't see those anymore, you know, because of the Rose Bowl. And then the Big Ten and Pac-12 used to play each other a lot in the regular season, and they don't do that anymore. Irishman 7114. I think the inside guys beating USC's O-line is the biggest matchup. The key to getting after Caleb Williams is pressuring him right up the middle, Ryan. I think that's a very astute observation.
No disagreement.
Great point.
It is. I definitely want to get in his face, but I will say this, Irishman 7114. I also do not want to just get interior pressure and then sacrifice rush integrity from the outside, though, because him out of the pocket is a tough matchup, right? I want to have good lane production from the outside, good lane discipline. But then I agree. I mean, I think this is a Jason Adamolola game, right? Like, it's a Howard Cross game. This is a Riley Mills and inside on obvious passing situations game. Like, I agree with you. Interior, because the one thing about Caleb Williams is he's a really physically built quarterback, but he's only about 6'1". Like, he's not the big, he's not the tallest quarterback of all time. So interior pressure can do a good job against them, I believe.
I will say this as a quarterback, if I can be great, if a team is going to be great one area and just okay in another as a pass rush inside outside, I would much rather face a team that's really good outside and not that great inside, because in inside pressure, I can step in and away from my, it's easier for my tackles to ride an end that whooped his butt out than a tackle. Yep. When I'm getting pressure in my face, it's a lot harder for me to spin out of that than it is for me to step into it. And I feel like Notre Dame is athletic enough to where if Caleb Williams has to go left, right to get out of pressure, they have a better chance at getting to him than him just going right vertical. That'd be my two cents. So, but another super chat from ND Nation. 25 will make some NFL team happy. What gives, Tommy Reese?
Don't even get me started.
I agree. Brian J. Irish, thank you for the super chat, ND Nation. Is Caleb Williams the best player in the field come Saturday night? We'll go Vince, Ryan, me. Is Caleb Williams the best player on the field come Sunday night?
He's the best skill player on the field. How about that? Because I think Notre Dame's got some pretty dang good tackles that'll go pretty high in the NFL draft. So I would.
Let me ask it this way. Let me ask it this way. Is he the best talent on the field? Number one, and then number two, is he the best player on the field? Big picture, and then number three, will he be the best on Saturday? So. Talent, bigger picture, best player, and then three, will he be the best in the actual game?
It's so hard to compare talent from like an offensive lineman to a quarterback. You know what I mean? And I will say yes, he has the most talent. I say yes, he'll be the best player on the field. And I say he will not be the best player on the field on Saturday.
So yes, yes, no.
Yep.
Okay. Ryan, what say you?
He's definitely the most impactful talent that'll be on the field on Saturday. Like he can be the difference in winning or losing a football game, in my opinion. I'm going to say he's the most talented player. Yes. He is. I'm going to stick with Vince. Yeah. I'm going to say yes, yes, no. For my situation, I think that he's going to be very good on Saturday, but I don't think that he's going to be the best player. So Notre Dame gets the victory, but it is very tough to, because you're right, Vince. I mean, I want to honestly say that Joe Walt is a better left tackle than Caleb Williams, the quarterback. And I think that you can make a legitimate conversation, but then it also comes back to, but quarterback is a much more a quarterback is a more impactful position than a left tackle. Right. So it's tough. It's tough.
I'm going to say yes, no, and no. Yes, he's the most talented. If we're talking about NFL draft projection, he probably has the highest ceiling of anyone on the field Saturday. No, he is not the best player on the field on Saturday because Michael Mayer is. And number three, no, I don't think he'll be the best player on Saturday night. I think somebody for his team or somebody else's team is going to step up and really go off. If Notre Dame wins this game, definitely the answer is no. If Notre Dame loses, there's a chance we could be saying that he's the best player on the field.
Sure.
But I still think it'll be like some Jordan Addison goes off, some defensive player has a huge game, something like that is what I think will happen. But I still think the most dominant player on the field on Saturday is Michael Mayer. And I feel like if Michael Mayer played in elite, played 11 games against the 11 teams that USC played, his numbers would look a whole lot different, in my opinion. There's no doubt about it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Indy Nation with another super chat. Let's end Caleb from getting the Heisman on Saturday. I mean, that's the other thing too on the line here, guys. Is this is a Heisman Trophy opportunity for Caleb Williams, and now you've got people saying he should be the front runner and all this other.
He needs
stuff.
His moment. He doesn't have a Heisman.
Well, this would be a moment though, right? Yeah. And then the season big off time. Like this would be a big time moment.
Against this kind of defense, because a lot of things you can say about him with his numbers is, well, who's he played?
Right.
And you know, I would argue that about C.J. Stroud as well. As much as I love C.J., it's like, well, who's he played? The Big Ten sucks this year. But the perception of the Big Ten is different than the perception of the Pac-12. And sadly, perception still matters a lot to people who vote for these things. You know what I mean?
They don't pay attention.
Right. You know, it's like how Brock Bowers is on the Biletnikoff Finalist Award, but Michael Mayer is not. When Michael Mayer has significantly better numbers and has been a much better player this year than Brock Bowers, because it's perception, it's reputation, it's nonsense. But, you know, the reality
it's because Brock Bowers is a wide receiver, not really a tight end.
Well, the Biletnikoff made it very clear to me this summer when I had a comment about it, that it's the best pass catcher, not it's the best receiver, not wide receiver. I'm like, you guys are seriously coming to me. They even called me and left a message on my voicemail. They were mad about it.
Oh, really?
About an article I wrote. Yeah.
The Biletnikoff people?
Biletnikoff. Somebody from Biletnikoff did. Yeah. Because I called it a wide receiver award. They were real salty about that. I'm like, don't do that and then leave Michael Mayer off.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
has a tight end ever
they had Brock
the
Bowers on there.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, I don't think a tight end's ever won it. So,
yeah.
Whatever. Mr. 2.0, is this a Riley Mills inside game? Seems like it might be. I think it's going to be both. I think it's going to be both. I think you're going to see him outside a little bit because I really like the idea of having that tough edge set. And I think there will also be times where you'll see him inside. I think you'll see a little bit of both. But primarily, I think, you know, I think we'll probably see him a little bit more inside. But I do think we'll see him some outside too. Because, look, it's not going to get discussed a lot, but it is very important that they set the edge. There's this giant fly that's been flying around my head the last 30 minutes, and I want to murder it so bad right now. So anyway, Behart 1074, can Notre Dame, for the most part, only take grad students because of the strict academics? It's not about strict academics per se. When people think academics, I think that people think GPA. It's very simple. Notre Dame, when you transfer, usually you have a department you're transferring into. I'm a history major. I'm a business. I'm doing this, right? Each department head sets a standard for what classes they will and will not accept from other colleges. And Notre Dame, for some reason, their department heads have really strict guidelines for what they will accept as transfers. They just don't like taking transfers. I don't understand why. They just don't. And so right now, the reality is Notre Dame can get a lot of transfers. It's just that, like, kids that have the academic success, it's just they won't accept most of their classes. Notre Dame's not going to accept a student who then won't be on pace to graduate on time because they rejected all of their credits. And that's the problem. That's what Notre Dame is going to have to figure out how to fix, is how can we make exceptions for athletes who are very good students that show an academic success to be able to come here and play sports. Somebody's going to have to step in and intervene. The difficult thing is the academic standards are simply come down to the provost and the admissions department. Essentially, it's a little bit more complicated, but essentially with this, it's every single different department head you have to convince, right? Now, what Notre Dame can do is maybe find two or three department heads of majors that most student athletes are going to go after and say, okay, well, now we'll look at grad transfer transfers that are going to major in business because we got the business person on board to be more flexible, or whatever the major most kids take. The other problem too is a lot of these big time players are being steered towards kind of blah academic programs that just aren't going to transfer over. And so that's going to make it more difficult as well. So it's not, oh, they're strict GPA wise. They only take 4.0 students to grad transfers. That's not really it. That's not really the issue behind it. All right. The Wine Dude, with USC joining the Big Ten, how will this impact us playing them going forward? I love to host them in late November. We talked about this yesterday. We don't know how it's going to change it. We don't know what the schedules are going to look like. He's talking about it could impact them, Vince, as far as when they play.
Okay. As far as
that's the unknown. They're not going to stop playing USC, but I do think that's the unknown, is the Big Ten may say, hey, look, we'd like for you to play them in the last game every year because it's going to make it easier for us to fit the Big Ten schedule together. Because once the Big Ten starts playing, they don't have random non-conference games in the middle of the season, week five and six.
They're always in the front.
Right. They're the front, and then, and they can say, hey, look, we can work with you if it's the last game of the year, and we always know it's the last game of the year, because the Big Ten will do some front-loaded big conference games, right? They had Penn State-Purdue first game of the year.
Right.
Nebraska-Northwestern first game of the year. So they can fit it in, but it's going to be hard to fit it in when your rivalry is like week five
would
or six.
Love to play them the last game of the season every single year. Agreed. Every single year.
Yep.
It'd be glorious.
Yep. Here's a question. Does the IB staff, from DC Irish 1213, does the IB staff think Ohio State and Michigan get in the playoff regardless of what happens tomorrow?
Absolutely.
I think Ohio State does.
Yeah.
Ohio State can't get blown out and lose to Michigan. I don't think they can get blown out.
I don't think.
But I think if Ohio State loses in a really close game, I think they still probably get in over.
It just depends on other stuff that goes on. Yeah.
I don't think USC,
when all the games have been played, and I'll have a comment.
I don't think USC. I'll say this, Vince. I don't think USC and Clemson can pass Ohio State. I don't. I think that LSU maybe, because they're closer, just where they are now. Because the committee has shown they don't throw all their previous rankings out. They go off of what they had the week before. That's what they've shown that they do, right? Joel Klatt nailed this one. They just, okay, that team won, move them up a spot. That's all. That's what they do.
Sure.
So unless LSU loses, I don't see how Clemson and USC can pass them unless the committee goes away from what they've done. Now, they should, but I think Ohio State has a better chance of staying in it with a close loss. I don't think Michigan does. Because Michigan doesn't have the Notre Dame win on their docket.
If LSU wins out, they're the SEC champs. They're going to get in.
I don't think that's necessarily a given. We've seen this before, Vince. We've seen two lost Big Ten team in Penn State who beat Ohio State in a head-to-head, didn't get in. Right? So I think it just depends on
you
now.
But you said it. We're talking about Big Ten and SEC.
Right.
Where's LSU right now?
SEC respect, champion gets in.
Fifth.
That's happening.
Fifth. Okay. I mean, if they beat Georgia, yeah.
I don't think it's a given. I don't. Now, it depends on, like, does TCU win? Does, Ohio State win? Does USC win? Who? I don't think it's a given that it happens. I think it's likely, but I don't think it's a given. Because, again, we have seen the committee do this before. We've seen the committee with Penn State in 2016.
SEC, we haven't. Not to the SEC,
but we've never. But you can't say that we haven't, Vince, because we've never seen a two-loss SEC champ.
I understand that, but they love the SEC, period.
They also love the Big
Ten.
They
will never do that. They will never do that to
you
the
don't,
SEC.
Okay, that's your opinion, but there's no data to support that. I mean, so that's just your just a guess. So we'll see. I hope we don't find out because I hope
we're not going to find out because LSU is going to get their asses handed to them by Georgia. So it doesn't matter.
I think the committee will be a little bit more leery of perception if it gets down to 12-1 USC, 12-1 Clemson, and an 11-2 LSU team. And we've seen them also do this before, guys. We've seen them buckle under that pressure before and drop a team that's been in the top four for a long time out. They did that to TCU. Now, again, that's a Big 12 team compared to an SEC team. And I do think there's merit to that, Vince, but I don't think it's a given that they're going to take a two-loss champ. I don't. Not if there's other one-loss teams. Again, they took Ohio State over them. We've seen it. I don't think they would have taken Auburn in 2017 if Auburn beats Georgia. I don't think Auburn gets in that year if they win. I don't. So just winning an SEC championship doesn't mean an automatic bid, in my opinion. But it's an opinion on my end as well because we don't have evidence. We haven't seen a two-loss team. It's a guess on both of our parts.
Yeah.
Ryan Olenek says, hey, guys, been a while since I've been able to hop on. Happy Thanksgiving, though. Same to you, Ryan. In your opinion, if Notre Dame loses a close one to SC, is the season a disappointment? I'll say in a word, yes.
Season's already a disappointment. Sorry.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay.
It is.
I don't agree with that. If they beat SC, it's not as good as it should have been, but it's not a disappointment, in my opinion. Still you beat two top 10 teams. Okay, that's your opinion. You gave yours. I'm giving mine, right? I don't think it is. I think you'd have two top 10 wins. I think it's not as good as it should have been. There's a difference between that and being disappointment. 8-4, flat-out disappointment. 9-3 with six straight wins in the season, beating two top 10 teams, potential two conference Power 5 conference champs. You know, it's not as good as it should have been, but to me, it wouldn't be a disappointment. 8-4, flat-out, big disappointment. I think that's one we can definitely all agree on.
Absolutely.
No matter what happens in a bowl game, they could play Brian Kelly and LSU and win by 40 in a bowl game, and it's still a disappointment. So they could play Bama and win by 20, and I'd say, hey, this is going to be good for recruiting. You beat Bama, it'd still be a disappointment. Like, four losses with this team, inexcusable, in my opinion. Inexcusable. And I think that is going to do it. We have no more questions here, I don't believe. And we want to go – oh, here we go, quickly from Indy Nation. If Caleb is on Notre Dame, are we probably undefeated? We discussed this the other day. I don't think there's any doubt that Notre Dame's undefeated if Caleb Williams is on their football team. There's no doubt. Because, like, some of the pressures that he got that Buckner missed throws on against Ohio State, Ryan, I think that Caleb Williams might hit. Some of those deep shots where guys were open, I think he would have been able to bounce off some of those as well because he's a lot bigger than Tyler is. So I think, I mean, they at worst 10-1 at worst. I think they're 11-0. The way that the defense played against Ohio State that day, it's just the thing Caleb Williams has never had. As good as he is, Caleb Williams never had a defense
ever.
Like in high school, maybe
in college,
maybe Gonzaga, You know what I mean? Like, I knew what you meant. I knew what you meant. I was just being silly with it. In college, he's never had a good defense. Like,
no.
Even an average defense. He's always had bad defenses. You know, yeah. We'll see. Anyway, that's going to do it for us, everybody. Please do us a favor. Hit that like button. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell. Reminder of our schedule tomorrow. Vince, you and Jesse, I believe, at 10 a.m. Vince and Jesse will have our IB countdown to kickoff, getting ready for Notre Dame and USC, and also talk about, I would imagine, Vince, Ohio State, Michigan, some of those other big games. We'll talk about that. And then we're going to do a live show. We'll start at 7. Okay, so we'll kind of have like a little bit of a pregame beforehand, a little preview, and we'll also use that time to try to help you all get your TV synced with us as best as possible. We will try to get that done beforehand, and then we will pause after the game. And we'll have about 10 or 15 minute intermission
ish.
And then
time to go to the bathroom, post-game show, back,
right?
Collect our thoughts,
not have to talk for 10 or 15 minutes. and then kind of get out whatever emotions we might need to get out, joy or sadness, whichever one. And then get back and be ready for our post-game show. So we'll do that tomorrow, after the show. So for Ryan, I almost did it wrong, Vince. For Ryan, Vince, I'm Brian. Have a great rest of your day, and we will talk to you all again very, very soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.